Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And additionally, me, Ian Morris.
And brought to you by you there, or possibly you. Thank you to our patrons for supporting us every week at patreon.com/UKTech. If you're a patron, you're getting this special episode early, because I'm currently on my honeymoon, having just gotten married. But if you're not a patron, but would like to be one and get our usual extended cuts, weekly columns, or raw unedited versions and more besides, head to patreon.com/UKTech, find out how you can support us. Now, we wanted to do a special episode because we're not going to be here next week, and we thought it was daft to try and guess what the news was going to be. But instead, Ian and I have both been using the iPhone 8. We've both been using the Apple Watch, as has my brother from CNET, who's going to pop in the room in a little bit as well. So we thought, why don't we just keep, for the people that don't want to hear anything about the iPhone, they don't have to sit through it in a regular episode. But for those of you who do want to hear our review, we've got a very special treat for you. And here is In and I's iPhone review. Apple's iPhone 8 is an unusual release for two reasons. Based on Apple's previous product cycle for its phones, this model should have been called the iPhone 7S. Instead, Apple skipped the S moniker and jumped straight to the 8. But secondly, both models were revealed alongside a brand new flagship, the iPhone X, meaning the iPhone 9 was leapfrogged in favor of being able to be released as a revolutionary product 10 years after the first one's birth. Apple would likely say that the advances made for the iPhone X were so great it warranted a double jump of numerals anyway. It's a strategy the old media player Winamp employed when it jumped from version 3 to version 5 back in 2003.
Man, that is some in-depth knowledge of Winamp.
Thanks.
Even I've forgotten that stuff. Yeah, so I mean, the iPhone 8 is different in from previous S generation phones, and it does sort of have a much more radical design, doesn't it? It's got this new type of all glass design that we haven't seen since the iPhone 4S. It comes with a very slight increase in weight, which, if that's important to you, you might want to bear that in mind. But I actually quite like it. Feels really good in the hand. The glass finish is beautiful and smooth. And you'd be wise to keep it in a case, which is what I'm doing. First of all, you want to avoid breakages. And second of all, with glass-backed phones, they have a habit of sliding over surfaces. It's a friction issue. A small gripe, perhaps, but probably one worth mentioning. The upside is that you'll find your fingers and hands, get more grip on the chassis compared to the iPhone 7, because it doesn't slip as much on your skin, I found, which, in it, you know, that's, I think, kind of the most important thing, right? You don't want to drop the thing, and a little bit of extra friction helps, and you do get that with glass. Headline features of these phones always tend to be cameras, of course, and it continues to impress. I really like it. I'd say it's without question one of the best cameras on the market. I'm fascinated by the Pixel. I think it will do an amazing job. So the iPhone 8 does handle low light better than the iPhone 7. They've increased the size of the sensor, I think, which helps. There's less noise. I've done a few tests with this and, you know, looked at it in some detail, and it's actually really quite impressive. Like the iPhone 7, there are times when it can overexpose, though. I've noticed that in my testing. But you can always solve that by tapping on the bit that you want to expose correctly, and as a rule, it gets it right. The always on HDR features really does produce great results, and once again shows that the point and shoot pocket camera is as good as dead if you've got an iPhone in the other pocket.
Yeah, the new portrait mode adds an advanced visual effect to pictures, which in the most extreme example can turn a subject into a black and white model, complete with a black background and beautiful soft edges and flattering skin. It works well a lot of the time, but as with the previous basic portrait function, it has some quirks that need working out. Sometimes edges aren't cleanly cut, for example, and it leads to a bit of the background appearing between your subject and the black effect that surrounds them. It's in beta, though, will likely be improved, as we saw with the previous portrait mode. Battery life, though, is very good. We've got a full day without needing to charge, with an average workday use case. Lighter use would certainly allow it to go more than a day. The wireless charging feature, which involves placing the phone on a pad that's plugged into the mains rather than plugging a cable directly into the phone, is an exercise in fantastic convenience, we found. Apple has shown it can do wireless charging better than any of its competitors, and it sets an example of how this sort of technology can be executed well. This might be the first example of wireless charging that actually makes us excited about the technology's future. In fact, it wouldn't surprise us if in a year's time, as venues start baking charging pads into bars and coffee tables, we start seeing apps that show you where your nearest wireless charging point is, much like we now have for discovering public Wi-Fi hotspots.
It's probably also worth pointing out that if you use the wireless charging in preference to plugging a cable in, that's actually slightly better for security. You don't want to go plugging your phone into unknown things, do you? And this is a good thing about that. And elsewhere, Apple's tweaked an already really good phone. It's enormously powerful, handling top-end apps and games with ease. The graphics processor is the first we've spoken about this before that Apple's developed itself, and it's a particularly good catalyst waiting for developers to make augmented reality gaming, which is going to be cool for showing off to your friends in the pub. I haven't seen much use of it yet. Apple gave us a few demos. It's looking good. What is available in the app store is really good, and the company has of course released AR Kit, which is a framework to help the production of AR apps and games, and we'll no doubt see lots of them. And the iPhone 8's power is going to be really important in that.
Yeah. So I think overall, it's definitely a model to consider upgrading to from anything other than an iPhone 7. But sadly, I think it may end up feeling a bit like a poor man's iPhone 10 when that comes out, which is both a shame because of how good a phone the iPhone 8 is, as well as weird that a phone that starts at £800 can be designated as something a poor person would be able to buy in the first place. That said, the iPhone 8 gets the seal of approval from Ian and Nate. So that's sort of our overview, I would say. We've covered all of our points there,
yeah.
Ian. I love it. I think it's great, but it's one of these things where there's only so much you can innovate while sticking to the same basic form factor. And that's why the iPhone X is so interesting, because it's moved away from things like having a fingerprint sensor at all and trying to make a bezel-less phone available to people in the Apple universe, at least. So, you know, it's an interesting one, isn't it? And it is still very, very expensive. And the competition is strong as ever, basically, with the Pixel 2 and the Note 8.
And that's true. And the Note 8 camera is amazing, truly amazing. And I had the opportunity to try both the Note 8 and the iPhone 8 with some people in a nightclub, of all places. And the iPhone couldn't get it. It couldn't do the shots because it was they were washing the club with blue light and stuff like that, and the iPhone couldn't compensate for it, whereas the Note 8 could. So, and these things are always a sort of they're a toss-up about priorities. I think you'll find probably the iPhone does such a good job day to day that you'll never notice those little problems.
I think so too.
It's interesting when it comes up, that's all.
Yeah, we've got a Note 8 here as well, and Kate and I were doing some comparison photos the other night, and we sort of concluded that, you know, these are both amazing, like they're both brilliant, but the differences are largely subjective.
And it comes down to lots of preference as well.
Exactly.
So, for example, I really like underexposed photos, and everyone hates this because I used to get told off for it all the time. But I would, by my personal nature, I would underexpose photos. The Note 8 does that. It produces a little bit more contrast, which is, I suppose, what I'm after. The iPhone probably technically gets it a little bit closer, but I think it blows highlights a little bit sometimes. But again, I'd deal with that because the portrait mode is so amazing. And we've both got photos, haven't we, that we've taken that are so good. It's almost unbelievable.
They are. And I think we can include a couple of those in the show notes at techpodcast.uk, just as some examples that we've taken. I mean, the other thing that we didn't mention in the review, because we didn't want to get sort of too technical there, is the iPhone 8 does have support now for shooting 60 frames a second 4K video, and compresses them in H.265 format, or HEVC, high efficiency video codec, and it's amazing. Like, it is so impressive to be able to shoot something that sharp and be able to zoom in. Like, that's the thing. You might say, well, I don't have a 4K TV. to me, the point isn't being able to watch it on a telly. It's being able to film something and zoom in on it and pan around it in real time.
And also just having something for the future, you know, like it when, okay, yeah, sure, a lot of us don't have 4K TVs now, but I will one day, and having 4K 60 it's so good. You know, people don't like the video look, but I just love that frame rate, and I think it looks amazing.
So, I think it looks, that, yeah.
It's in fact a killer feature, and I did write an article about it.
It's a very, very good feature. I love it. The only challenge with it is that support for that is not as wide as H.264, as the standard that most people are using. So you'll find things like, I noticed that when I was shooting it on the iPhone 8 and then tried to play it back on the iPad, it said full resolution not supported on this device, which is not an error that you tend to see on Apple products. You know, it still lets you view it, and it's still a very, very, very good looking video, but it drops it down to like a 30 frames a second H.264 format, which it converts in the cloud. You know, it's all done in iCloud, but it's something that you're gonna have to be aware of initially, that if you're only viewing it on the phone, you're fine. But if you are viewing it across multiple devices, which I do, then you need to make some choices about whether you want to invest in this format yet. And I'm not 100% sure I do yet, but for certain specific uses, I've turned it on, namely for the wedding.
And you can always drop it off again. It doesn't do any damage to have it recording in that format, does it?
No, exactly. Well, that's it for the iPhone 8. Let's talk a bit about the watch. And Andy Hoyle from CNET is going to join us shortly for this a bit. I didn't want to go in too much detail here, but I did want to cover some of the more important things. And to begin with, I think we should talk about design. It still looks great. It feels great. No changes there. But the battery life, I have to say, is the one thing that I've found to be the most impressive overall. The battery I have had going for 3 days and 2 nights without taking it off and without having to charge it, which for me is incredibly impressive, given that we were led to believe that watches like this are going to last a day at best. How's your experience been?
Yeah, it's exactly it's been exactly the same, really. I like the fact that I can have it for two or maybe a little bit longer days. I tend to wear it overnight just because I can't be able to take it off mostly. And, you know, I kind of feel like the longer the better in a way. It doesn't bother me to charge it up. But yeah, I kind of, for me, I think they've got it exactly right. Some people have complained, I know, about having, you know, the way it isn't on all the time, which you can get with certain Android watches. It doesn't bother me. I think it's so good at detecting that. I think that they've balanced the power consumption just right. I think the only thing is I'm not too fussed about the 4G aspect of it, but we'll see.
Yeah, and Andy's going to talk about that hopefully shortly. But I mean, the 4G aspect is one of those things where it's only going to be really exciting when it's available on all the networks. At the moment, it's on EE, which for me as a Vodafone customer is no good. I have got an EE SIM now, which I'm going to put in the iPhone 7 and pair the watch to that and use a bit of the 4G. Andy already has done, and he's coming shortly. Personally, though, even without the LTE, you know, I think the watch is a big step up over the first generation, in particular, because the battery life is so much better. The speed of apps loading and refreshing is so much better. Like, there's so much about it that makes it a worthwhile jump if you're using it every day anyway, that makes me very excited. I just wonder who is using a Series 2 and then jumping to this one, because the Series 2 had a much bigger battery than the first one and a much faster processor. So you're really seeing less of a jump from the 2 to the 3 than from the 1 to the 2, which I know is obvious, but with something like this, I think it's worth really hammering that home.
So yeah, but I think that the good thing about the Apple Watch is that it's never a massive jump. Like, there are some advantages to upgrading, but ultimately, if you've still got a Series 1, you're probably going to be quite happy with it. And if you've got a Series 3, you'll be quite happy with it for 10, you know, for five, or probably not 10 years, but for 3 years to come. And I think I was always, the thing about smartwatches is that people in the, you know, people who like watches tend not to love them, because you know, there is a certain stability to watches that lasts and lasts and lasts. You can pick up a watch that was built 100 years ago or a watch that was built yesterday, and they'll probably both work and work well. We won't be able to say that about smartwatches. But again, it's a very different proposition. But I think what Apple's doing with keeping the design the same, not releasing endless iterations of it, I think that's a really good way to make it feel like a consistent product, even though the hardware in may change over time. I still think you look at Apple Watch and you go, well, that's the Apple Watch, and you know what it is, and it you know, it has a look of its own.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think about the fitness stuff? Because for me, this has been one of the things that I found most encouraging, is that I never really liked the Apple Watch as a kind of as an extension to the phone, simply because to begin with, when it first came out, it was largely like a square of notifications on my wrist. Yeah. And I kind of always had this war on notifications because I don't think we need so many. So
well, you do get complete control over them, which is really nice.
You do, but to begin with, the ecosystem wasn't as developed, and so there wasn't enough outside of that to make me really wish I was wearing it, whereas now I do. I wear it every day. But the fitness stuff I found particularly interesting, you know, that fitness tracking element and the closing of the rings, the encouragement to breathe, the fact that it will support yoga workouts and things like that. Like, there's enough there to make it really quite valuable to me, even if I didn't have the phone. It wouldn't work without the phone, but if you know what I'm saying, it's quite a compelling amount of usefulness there.
No, I do. And I've got to say that, again, it seems kind of silly, but Apple has managed to get that fitness thing quite nicely tied together. My experience with Android Wear wasn't the same. Like, whilst all of them all track your steps and all that kind of stuff, none of them do as good a job at presenting that information back to you as the Apple Watch does. Like, you know, again, I'm always wary that people are like, oh, you know, the Apple Watch, you know, or whatever. And maybe, you know, because we both are, you know, quite big fans of it, I wonder if they think we're just not objective about it. But I've used the Android stuff.
Yeah, so have I used all the Galaxy Gears, or Gears, yeah, as they were renamed.
Exactly. And I've still got Android Wear watches here that I occasionally think, oh, I'll have a quick go with this. And the experience is fine, but it's for health and stuff like that. I like the idea of it monitoring your heart rate almost constantly, and it does it every now and then.
But I hate that.
Well, you don't have to use it, presumably.
Turned it off. The last thing I need as a chronic hypochondriac is something on my wrist flashing up and saying, dude, your heart rate's really high. You might want to get that checked out.
Well, but that's the thing, you see, because particularly, you know, like I have what I would consider to be not a great resting heart rate. I don't get enough exercise, I don't think, and I could do with running a bit, and, you know, I would have a much better resting heart rate. But my heart, it's within the normal range. So what the Apple Watch does now, which is really good, is if it jumps up hugely, and it would be an abnormal amount, and it would know that you hadn't done any exercise, it gives you a warning. Now, okay, I admit that that's perhaps not great for you, but for me, it's like, okay, well, that's something to think about, and if it keeps happening, it's something to maybe raise with a doctor. It will save lives, and that is really, really important. And I think we'll see more of this stuff. And, you know, okay, you wouldn't rely on it, but if it's extra information that you wouldn't otherwise have, then great.
Yeah, and I can see mine. Mine right now is 65. My heart rate, sorry, 60.
Oh, your resting heart rate is a lot lower than mine, mate.
68 now. It's usually in the 70s. Right now, for some reason, it's 67.
Oh, you're chilled.
But what's interesting is that I'm looking at the history, the historical graph here, because I kept it on overnight last night. So I can see that overnight, I can actually see the point at which I obviously fell asleep, and then my heart rate dropped to about 50, maybe 55. And then as I can see when I woke up, and then it jumps much higher. So there's at one point here that says that it hit 47, but I believe that must be an error, because there's no way my heart rate was ever 47 beats a minute.
Well, you don't know. I mean, when you're resting and asleep, it might well be.
No, this was at 12:30. So I strongly doubt that. So, but either way, you know, it's useful to have. I just don't want it telling me that I might have a heart condition and should go and get it checked out. So,
wouldn't you rather know, you know, like, even if it was some worry, if you went to a doctor, they'd go, no, you're fine.
No, I'd rather go and have them tell me than to have it tell me I might and that I should go. if that makes sense.
Yes, I mean, I understand that. I do understand that. Yeah. It's not for everyone, and everyone has very different opinions on health. I was probably a lot more like you, you know, a while ago, you know, some many years ago, I was quite, you know, anxious about health in general. Now I'm like, you know what, honestly, as a rule, you generally know if something's not quite right. But I think it's just good. And and if people use it, it will save lives, and that's worth it.
Well, joining us now and taking time out of his busy schedule of being my brother, my best man at the wedding, and senior editor and photographer for CNET.com is Andrew Hoyle. Thanks for coming over. Now, you've been using the 4G LTE features of the new Apple Watch, which Ian and I have just been talking about. Can you talk us through maybe what the setup process is like?
The setup is kind of as simple as you'd expect an Apple product to be. It's very much you just open the app, take the steps that it says and register it on the network, and that's pretty much it. You get some information about the additional costs that you'll have, which Nate, you'll be able to give in more detail. But the setup is really very simple, and once you're going, again, it's you. There's very little input that you have to give.
I see. Okay, and is that setup happening on the watch or on the phone? Like most apps you configure using the Apple Watch are actually done on the Apple Watch app on iOS.
Yeah, it's still all done through the phone. So once you've got your Apple Watch actually set up, when you scan the face of the watch on your phone, the steps is all done through the Apple Watch app on your iPhone. And then everything's then put into place on the watch.
Okay, so talk us through what it's like to use the LTE features and calling. What sort of setup have you been using for testing that?
I made a point of having the phone that my Apple Watch was registered with not with me. So whenever a call came through to that number, only my watch rang, because of course when you've got your phone with you, the LTE on your watch doesn't need to be active. It's only when you actually go away from your phone, if you're going for a run, for example, or a long walk, and you don't want to take your phone with you. And so in that case, yes, the watch rang, and then you accept the call just like you would if you were getting a call now through to your phone. And then of course when you've got Bluetooth headphones paired with the watch, when you take the call, it goes through to those headphones.
Have you found battery life? I wondered if having a 4G radio in there and being switched on all the time was going to hit the performance of the battery's little limited charge.
In comparable use between this one and the previous model, for just day-to-day notifications, incoming, that sort of thing, the battery life is pretty much the same. That's even with the LTE connectivity going on. And what we haven't been able to do yet is actual how long you can make a call for, how much of a drain being on a phone call through the watches. Those obviously are important tests. We need to know how long you can chat away through your wrist. So that's, of course, what we're up to at the moment. But early signs are that it's as good, certainly as good as the current generation.
All very positive so far then, I suppose. Are there any negatives? Anything that you expected the watch to do that it doesn't?
Regular SMS messages is a big thing in that they're not supported, so you can't dictate and send a text through it. iMessages are still supported, and any other apps that you may have installed on the phone, but not SMS.
All right, while I've got you here, let's talk a bit about the iPhone 8 photography, as it includes some new features like studio lighting effects for the SLR camera-like portrait mode. We talked about the phone earlier at the top of the show, but as you're a professional photographer, I can't let you go without at least asking you what you think to the camera on the iPhone 8 Plus. How do you rate it?
So far, it's definitely up there with the best, and by the best, I also include the iPhone 7 Plus, because Apple's cameras were already the best, or certainly among the best cameras you can find in smartphones, and the 8 and 8 Plus is certainly no exception. I'm taking really, really great shots. I love the low light functionality. Obviously, then we've got the features with the new portrait modes and the lighting effects. So far, they do seem like a little bit of a novelty. You'll find the odd scenario where you can get a really good example and go, wow, this is really cool. But for the most part, it is akin to applying a filter effect onto a photo. So, and I have found many occasions where actually it doesn't cut out the background around your subject very neatly. So the photos do look very artificial and a bit weird. So I think there's still a lot of work to be done there. But in terms of out-and-out image quality, they are fantastic cameras.
Yeah, I mean, we should highlight probably that the new studio lighting mode is in in beta. I had a briefing with Apple recently and that came up as a topic. But the existing portrait mode, which adds just the depth effect to photos, was also in beta when it came out and had some small quirks that now seem to be ironed out. So I think that's now out of beta. This one's in beta. I'd expect the lighting mode to probably go through a similar process, I guess. For me, though, the most exciting change on the camera front, not to be confused with the front camera, is the fact that third-party apps can now access the depth sensor information captured by the lens, which I think will open up a lot of interesting new features in photography apps.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things that I found particularly exciting. Was I've seen some examples already of apps that can help you do composites on the phone, so basically you can cut out the portrait of a friend or a family member, whoever's in the shot, and then place them into a completely different background, apply all these different effects separately to their face, to the background. The sort of things that if you were trying to cut out that person in Photoshop to the same level could take you a good half an hour for someone who's experienced.
Great, thanks, Andy. Well, I imagine you've got reviews ongoing and stuff for the new devices. What have you got coming up that people should look for?
Yep, I've got a whole package of features putting the iPhone's camera through various different tests. So, yeah, do keep your eye on CNET.com for those. Or actually, you can follow me on Twitter with @BatteryHQ, and I'll be posting all of those on there. So do keep your eyes peeled over the coming weeks.
Cool. Cheers, Andy. Ian, all good. Is there anything we've missed and not talked about with these devices?
No, I don't think so. I mean, yeah. I think that's the most comprehensive review ever. No, I'm sure there is, but also I'm sure we'll talk about them again in the future.
Yeah, definitely. And if you've got one, if you're planning on buying one, if you're definitely planning on not buying one, do let us know. podcast@natelangston.com. We'll be back with episode 109 next weekend when I'm back from my honeymoon. So do keep any emails and messages coming into us before then. Thanks again to our patrons supporting us at patreon.com/UKTech. Remember, no commitment. You can go and give us a try for as little as $1 or $2 a week.
It's not like buying a dog. That's a big commitment.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.